It is Saturday, March 5th, 2011, 10 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news the entire hour.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for my favorite program, Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. It's that time of year again. We're doing Pledge Drive today. We have a great matching grant from an anonymous person in Scotts Valley, which I drove through this morning. Imagine that on the way to the station. And that's a $500 match, which means that anything you donate during this time period of Geek Speak will be matched dollar for dollar. We thank that anonymous donor for their pledge. Miles, hi. Well, let me turn your mic on, buddy.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. You want to start us out a little bit about telling us
a little bit about what's going on with our pledge?
Please.
Pledge system? And there's a lot of confusion that goes on with regard to how much help public radio gets from the federal government and
right.
the whole politics surrounding that. And really, if you're wondering whether to make a pledge, wondering like how that would affect us, how what your role can be in that, here's some helpful information. One, KUSP's mission is it's a public service. It's not a for-profit corporation. It's we're here for the community,
mm-hmm.
And not for the interests of a powerful few, and our funding comes from a mix of sources, about half from listeners who donate, about 30% from local businesses, and just under 11% from the federal government. The rest comes mostly from local philanthropic sources. So taxpayer support for public radio is under fire right now in Congress, and it's hard to know how that debate will resolve itself. This membership campaign is your opportunity to ensure that KUSP will thrive, whatever the future might bring. So this is the lay of the land, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I just want to mention also that, of course, the content that we produce on KUSP, especially a show like Geek Speak, is really aligned with a lifelong learning perspective. I mean, just think about what you listen to on KUSP. Think about how many books you've heard about and decided to read, how many engaging films or TV programs you've heard of, just something about because of what you heard on KUSP, how much music has come into your life because of recording, the interviews we do, the wonderful music we play all the time. You listen to public radio to stay sharp, to stay connected, to feed the appetite for lifelong learning. That's, of course, why you're listening to Geek Speak, because we feed that need to learn. And because you're learning from us, because you're doing that, we ask you to donate.
Yeah, and how can you donate to KUSP? Well, you could give $15 a month. After 12 months, that will add up to $180. That would be math.
That's good math.
Yes. We can charge your credit card or bank account, or we can send you a bill in the mail, whichever is most convenient for you. A $15 monthly donation is a convenient and affordable way to provide ongoing support for the news and the music that you rely on from KUSP.
The phone number is 888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507. We are having a matching grant right now, so your money is matched double for every dollar you call in. Of course, you can go to KUSP.org to donate as well if you'd like to do it that way. But let me go ahead and start the show off the way I normally do, to say that I'm Lyle Troxell, and in the air with me are Miles Elam. He's a software engineer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Al Lucca, a new media architect. Good morning.
Hi, everybody.
We're going to start off the news with Mr. Miles Elam. Your first story, sir?
A funny thing.
You know what? Let me just mention that
okay.
After that, Al's going to be talking about a very strange history of insects. So yes. A little bit of a history and sex story. And I got to say, this is a very sexy story. So, but first, Miles, what do you got?
This is a not so sexy story. This has to do with the Apple App Store. So one thing that's really interesting about the App Store is, and it goes back and forth, Apple having very strong control over it and sometimes arbitrary rules about who goes in and who doesn't. And then this, it's a back and forth, especially because they're also a vendor. So they're not just a provider of stuff. They're right. also a vendor. So if you're on an iPhone, you have Mobile Safari. And for a long time, there was some conflict as to whether or not they would allow a competing browsers such as Firefox or Opera. And Opera is available on the iPhone.
Yeah, there's another one, too, that you can get.
I believe there are a couple,
yeah.
There's
a few.
Mm-hmm. Many of them also are just rebrands, like wrappers around Safari
right.
as well. But
right. My son uses one that actually has restrictive of what content he can go to, but it's really just Safari with restrictions.
Right. right. But they moved that App Store over to the desktop. Mm-hmm. So in the new version of OS X, you have a Lion, but also in the current Snow Leopard, you have an App Store. If you've done an update. And the browsers are available on there, like Opera.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, though, that when you try to get Opera, which is free, by the way, you get a label, you see a label on that purchase point saying you must be at least 17 years old to download this app.
For Opera? Why?
For Opera. Well, that's a funny thing. Like, it's this is something that a lot of people are wondering, including... Yeah. Executives at Opera Software.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on the phone, if the App Store rules are modeled from the phone environment, any app on a phone that has potential restrictive content on it, it has a warning like that. So I'm assuming they've just taken the same practice onto the desktop environment. And because, of course, if you're using like the Craigslist application on your iPhone, you can, through Craigslist, find stuff that would be inappropriate for some ages, even though that's not in the application. It's actually what the application's accessing. So I can see that kind of broad idea that if you can get to stuff that's inappropriate, warn people.
Yeah, but is that...
It's not a warning. It's a restriction.
Right, and is that the...
Right now.
But do you also get that badge with regard to a Twitter app or a Facebook app? And I don't think you do.
Oh, interesting. Hmm. Of course, those things are the same type of situation where the application itself is not doesn't have restricted
right.
content, but what
exactly.
it can access is. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So the question... So you're talking kind of... The question arises, is Apple demoting the importance or giving restriction to competitive applications on the App Store?
Well, it's no question that they actually do.
Oh.
But at the same time, it's...
Why didn't you lead with that?
Well, they had for a long time, and this has been grudging over the course of iPhone and app development to let stuff on there. It's just a thing for people to keep in mind so that when these discussions come up, and they do come up more and more often these days, that you have some point of reference to know what the history is behind these decisions and to make that decision of saying, is this justified or is this not?
Right.
As opposed to have it coming in just out of the blue going, oh, there's an antitrust suit against Apple,
that type
of thing.
All right. Well, thank you for keeping us surprised of what's going on in the App Store. I'm curious about it. I recently was trying... I work at an education environment. I was trying to buy the most recent version of one of the suites of applications on a Mac, and I couldn't get the educational price on the online store. When I called Apple to try to get a downloaded educational price, basically I just need a serial number, but I didn't want to go through the long period of wait for the cycle of purchasing. The Apple was very clear that they couldn't sell me anything digital unless it went through the App Store. Like, all their marketing went through that way. And of course, there's one price. It doesn't have a family pack price. Doesn't have an educational price. It's, they're learning, I should say. But let's move on. Al, well, first, Miles, what's your next North Star after Al to kind of forward promote it? What's it going to be about? Quick line.
It's going to be about antitrust and the MPEG LA.
Okay, cool. We'll find out more about what that means. But first, what's the sexy story about insects, Al?
Well, before I go actually into the description of this, I just want to warn anybody out there who has underaged mites... You know,
I see. So this is a story about...
It's about mites.
About mites.
Mites,
so
yes.
If you've got mites under the age of 4 hours, you
should not give
them
alcohol or cigarettes.
Right.
Or let them use Opera.
If you're over four hours old and you're a mite, it's okay.
Okay.
Well, let's go back 40 million years ago. It was a... It was a soft evening. There was a beautiful moon out, and it was a lovely romantic evening. And a female mite was strolling along and met an attractive partner, who, of course, immediately grabbed her. That's what mites do. Mm-hmm. And began to mate.
Okay.
Because it was so romantic. Well, just at that exact moment, wouldn't you know it, a big blob of tree resin fell on this couple.
Sap.
Okay.
Oh.
It really ruined the moment. But what it did do...
What are you talking about? It made the moment last forever.
Yes. It preserved the moment for eternity.
It depends on how you look at it. So many things to say and so inappropriate for radio. I will read it.
It's a you know, half full, half empty, whatever. But anyway, these mites, they're now extinct, actually, the entire...
This species.
Yeah.
Of it.
Mm-hmm. Glascaris rhombeus.
That's because they were always trying to procreate inside of the sap.
They had this bad habit of being
rhombeus. Were they like
dropping.
Square and then kind of shifted off to the side?
Yeah. Actually, they do kind of look like that.
Do they look like rhomboids?
Yeah, they look like rhomboids. Yeah, maybe that's where that comes from. Anyhow, yeah.
Nice deduction, Miles.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and we'll have a link up to this on the web, and they have
so they're
a picture.
Frozen in time.
Yeah, they've got these two mites side view frozen in time. It's pretty dang obvious what they're doing.
And we're dying 40 million years?
It's 40 million years
Amber
ago.
Is so cool.
And they have just been, immortalized in this blob of resin. It was this was reported in the Biological Journal of the Linen Society. So, you know, it's an interesting thing.
As in
thing.
Textiles?
No, it's L-I-N-N.
Okay.
E-A-N. Linnean.
Linnean. Okay.
Linnean Society.
Neat. So they found this little thing, and there you got it for 40 million years.
Yes.
Frozen.
And you can see it now on the web. Actually, they've got lots of views, too.
You know, you can go up to on your machine right now, go to geekspeak.org, but while you're there and taking a look at the cool pictures we set up and stuff, go ahead and go to KOSP as well and donate, because we are doing that. Miles, I believe we have some thank yous.
Yes. Thank you very much, Andrew from San Jose, Beth from Boulder Creek, Linda from Santa Cruz, and Helen from Royal Oaks. Your support is greatly appreciated.
You can also donate. We'd love to have your donation. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. Going to get back to some news. But the phone number is 888-777-1507. If you're uninterested in Miles' story about politics he's about to cover, please do call during that. 888-777-1507. Okay, Miles, you better be interesting.
That was a nice lead up.
And after that, Al's going to talk more about bugs.
Yes.
But more current day
I'm
bugs.
I'm going to bug you some more.
But first, let's let Miles bug us.
Discovered from the Wall Street Journal, the Justice Department is looking into whether to do antitrust
legislation
or antitrust prosecution, I should say, against MPEG LA, which is an organization that controls the patents behind what we see on Blu-ray, on DVDs. So MPEG 2, MPEG 4.
Is this the group that all the other people that are involved in those are members of? Is that the...
Yeah. Well, okay. Different people have a stake in them. Yes.
Right.
But
okay.
Sure. Yes.
So it's kind of the head, if you will, of the Blu-ray consortium. Is that a good way to say it? Not really.
I mean, Sony controls Blu-ray.
Okay.
So that's pretty clear. But the technology that they're using, so the back end stuff that you don't really see, all you know is that Blu-ray looks really nice on 1080p monitors.
Sure.
The technology behind
the data
on that Blu-ray disc to translate to that 1080p is what's at stake.
Okay.
And one of the issues with that codec, specifically H.264,
A codec is just the algorithm used to compress and transfer data.
Or right.
Compress and uncompress data. Go on.
And
the H.264 one.
Right. Is one that's used for Blu-ray, but it's also, if you have lower bit rates, highly useful for web content. In fact, that's the most common web content if you go to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at that, you're actually using H.264.
And anything Apple is releasing in video is H.264 as well.
Yes. And the issue, though, is that even though they've said we're not going to put any license fees on it, they haven't said in perpetuity, so it may be four years down the road when everyone's using it, then they go, okay, now you have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an idle threat because this is something that happened with GIF images, a type of image format used on the web back in the late 90s. You had people using it. It became ubiquitous. And then all of a sudden, you had Unisys come out saying, okay, now everyone who uses GIF has every time you're using Limbles of Welch encoding, you have to pay us.
Right. And this basically means that there was a large free expanse, and everybody started using this algorithm. So every browser had the GIF player, if you will, to be able to play GIF images. I mean,
display them, yes.
Display them, but also play them. They're animated. And then after the wide distribution of millions and millions of websites using this content and all browsers kind of having to support it to look at the websites, then the company comes in and says, I'm sorry, you're going to have to pay for this.
A little more nuanced than that, but yes.
That's the general thing. Yeah. And what you're saying is that with H.264, it is the default video format in a lot of sense all over the place. And it's possible in the future this group will say, you know what, you got to pay us now.
Right. And this became an issue with regard to the web now because we're moving to newer video standards.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ways to avoid this, because Google has a huge storehouse of these videos and doesn't want to pay that money, those licensing costs, and there's also the barrier to entry for smaller outfits that want to put video up or try to encode that. Google has put forth what's known as the VP8 codec, mm-hmm. which is a competitor. And they've gone through great lengths to try to keep it from infringing on any of the patents that are held by MPEG-LA. MPEG-LA has followed this up by saying, hey, any company out there that thinks they have a patent that is held by VP8, if you come to us, we'll totally work out a deal with you and you're going to come out ahead. And it's not because they found information. What the Justice Department is asserting is that they are trying to, spoil the pool, as it were, to mm-hmm. try to...
to damage the potential future.
Right,
of that
to have
form.
People be much more cautious about VP8 so that they don't use it and so they can keep their dominant foothold in that mm-hmm. in that web space.
Well, it's a matter of who you want to dominate, because Google will try to dominate the space.
No, VP8 actually is royalty-free, license-free, and will remain that way in perpetuity.
That's how Google's claimed it. And the only way that would fail potentially is if that codec was infringing on somebody else's patent. And Google's spent a lot of time to try to make sure that it doesn't, but there's a fear now that it is. That's the basic idea of the story.
Well, someone is trying to manufacture fear.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't think you think that's pretty viable that it's going to be safe, but of course that would have to be tested in court. And so the question is, do you go with the larger standard, which definitely has a potential future where a company could say, this is going to cost money, or do you go with Google's open format, which potentially could have the same thing, but less likely? Or you say, this is really fear-mongering, go with VP8. Is it VP8?
VP8. Well, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know how things are going to turn out. At the same time, I do wish that VP8 were out. I do believe that the web should have... I don't mean that H.264 should not be allowed on the web.
Yeah.
I absolutely think it should be.
Right.
But I think that everyone should have the option of having VP8. Because that means that someone who has a small outfit that just has some small business and wants to put some content up has an option that is that low barrier to entry.
Right.
And that's what you lose when you have these patented algorithms, is you start losing that, you start getting nickel and dimed at every single turn.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Miles, for the story. Let's go on to more insect news, I guess, today from you, Al.
Yeah. This is not as, it's not a...
It's not as old a story.
It's not as old a story. It's not sexually insectoid.
Okay.
Although it does involve the yellow sack spider. And I'll let you figure that one out.
Okay, so something about the yellow sack.
Yes. This spider apparently is causing the recall of 65,000 Mazda 6s in the United States.
Because
the spider.
Miles, what do you think? How do you think a spider can cause a recall of 52,000 Mazdas?
Because they're spinning their webs in some place that blocks an intake valve.
I thought you would suggest a software problem. All right, go on.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It may eventually cause the fuel tanks to leak due to blockages.
Winner!
Yes. This certain type of spider may weave a web in the evaporative canister vent.
Okay.
And this causes a restriction in the line, and the car tries to compensate and ends up causing the fuel tank to leak.
Why is Mazda responsible for the spider doing this? If you design a car that's not animal proof, if I design a small car and it's light and someone says, elephants could crush this car, so we have to recall it. I mean,
well, yeah.
Or is it happening a lot is the problem?
It's already happened. That's the problem.
Okay.
This has already been happening a lot.
Interesting.
People have been bringing the cars back, and they're seeing this problem. and they're just kind of like, uh-oh, I think we're going to have to do something about this. So now they're recalling these cars, and they're going to put, well, the mechanics go in there and they suck all the spider remnants out of there, the webs and all that kind of stuff. And then they put in some weird kind of spring that goes in the pipe that keeps the spider from getting inside here. But the spider lives predominantly in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and it doesn't like the cold. So, but it just has some weird thing about this particular car, and it gets into this one place, and they keep getting these cars back, and it's this problem. And the car is just, you know, as soon as it blocks this vent, the car tries to purge it. Because it senses this pressure problem in the fuel tank, and that's what causes the tank to eventually crack, which spills.
Wow.
Yeah, it's weird, you know. But
a little spider causes a web, then the CPU in the machine is programmed to kind of start to build the pressure.
Something's
up,
building,
and then
up
the
there,
tank
yeah.
cracks. It cracks the tank.
Yes.
Clever little spider.
Which is
now
weird.
All they have to do is figure out how to feed on human flesh, and they're
stuck. Yeah, I was totally thinking of the Goldilocks problem there. Like, this intake vent is too small. This intake vent is too big. This intake vent is just right.
So they put a spring in there. That's the solution.
But that's the yellow sac spider.
Cool.
And it only affects a 4-cylinder version. So maybe it's because they're trying to be, you know, efficient.
All right. So. Well, thank you very much, Al. Al's next story is kind of next about insects, but a little more futuristic. But first, Miles, your next story?
My next story is going to be about what your next router should be.
Oh, home tech. How fun.
Home tech.
You know, when KOSP was founded in the 1970s, there were no routers in common distribution, I should say. There definitely weren't any home routers. In the early 70s, a small group of visionaries founded KOSP. And I'm talking small group, I think 4 or 5 people. And nearly 40 years later, thanks to donations of thousands and thousands of listeners, KOSP has evolved into an online, of course, now, through those routers, and broadcast source for world-class news covering a wide range of music. As we prepare to move into our fifth decade, we're committing to continuing our mission of providing a service that's focused on public service, not profit. And that includes increasing our production of local news features and continuing our broadcast of major local music festivals. During this on-air campaign, we're inviting new partners like you to help preserve this special place on the radio and on the internet, too.
And if you're trying to figure out how much to give, maybe this will help. Think about how much time and money you spend on cable TV, movies, daily paper, books, how much your internet connection costs. Think about how much time you spend with KUSP. For example, in the morning when you're making your commute and you are listening to traffic reports, if you're getting the daily news, listening to something interesting on your way to work to wake up as a replacement for your daily coffee. While you're figuring out that math of that time you're spending, think about the most generous pledge that you can afford. One that's commensurate with the value that you gather from KUSP. You can give online at KUSP.org, or you can call 888-777-1507. And podcast listeners, you can make a donation to KUSP.org at any time. There's a big blue button on the homepage, KUSP.org, and that's a great way to do it. You don't have to wait for GeekSpeak to be live and in person.
But listening live right now, as you are, if you're listening to our broadcast, please feel free to call us and do a matching and match our matching grant. We still have money left on the first $500 from an anonymous donor in Scotts Valley. We are in this hour still. We've got GeekSpeak goal for the hour has been $1,500. We still have $1,000 left of that goal. Please call in now to help us match the goal. You listen to GeekSpeak because you like it. It's time now to show us that you do. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507.
And with that matching gift, every dollar you give is matched. It's doubled dollar for dollar. So $1 in, $2 out.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, that was Miles Elam. We also have Al Lucca. Say hi, Al.
Hi, Al.
KOSP co-sponsors the Santa Cruz County Symphony performance Rhythms of Life, featuring music by Leonard Bernstein, Peck, El Zorado, Saint Census, and John Philip Sousa at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium Sunday, March 6th at 2 p.m. Tickets and information are available at 420-5260 or online at santacruzsymphony.org. The geek bit today, we normally cover like an interesting story. I just want to mention yesterday at the Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History, we, the MA downtown, I went to a great presentation by some Googlers talking about the project, the online art gallery and museum project. I think it's called, oh man, I'm going to have to look this up. That's ridiculous. Google Art Project? I think that's what
that
it's called.
That would be GAP.
Yeah. Google Art Project. Well, it's actually one URL. The thing that's amazing about this, they have 17 different museums. They've collected photographs of the entire inside. If you're familiar with Street View, Google Street View, you can go to geekspeak.org to look at the URL and a little write-up about it. But basically, the Google Street View brought into museums. There's 17 museums. You can go to this website right now and take a look at these museums. And key images of from these museums, key paintings, have been scanned at extremely high resolution, so much so that you can click in until you can see the cracks in the painting and the high details you probably couldn't see even if you were at the museum, because you wouldn't be able to get too close because the guy standing there in the brown would say, excuse me. So anyway, 17 different galleries. The technology is kind of cool. I talked to the engineer afterwards talking about how to do this. And of course, in the street view, the cars that drive around and take pictures, they're using GPS to align that to the map, to Earth. In a museum, you can't do that. So we talked about the laser scanning technology they're using to get the room shape. And also they start with a floor plan, which is interesting because that's kind of cheating. And then they drive this little vehicle around or push this little cart around that's keeping track of everything. So it's really neat to see how that works. And if you're interested in museums, definitely take a peek. Okay, you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. We're now going to do some more news. While we're doing news, please feel free to call. There's people in the other room. Rick is here every week for Geek Speak listening, taking your calls when we do calls. But he's in the other room right now taking your donations. You can talk to Rick if you give us a call, 888-777-1507. Al, I believe it's your turn. So this is about insects, but not really. How so?
Well, you familiar with the hex bug? Those little robotic things you can buy. They're like little toys for kids. And they're just, they have a little circuit board in them, and you turn them on, there's a battery, like a little watch battery, and it comes around and bumps into something, backs up, goes the other way.
Sure.
There's a certain amount of logic. It's very small, kind of neat. Well, it turns out that the University of Michigan had this senior engineering project, and they took the circuitry from this hex bug, and they attached it to an actual roach into the neurosystem of the actual,
it's bug.
Kind of a big, it's a roach.
They took a roach,
yes,
a cockroach.
A live cockroach.
And they connected connections to the brain.
Yes.
Or to the body.
Mm-hmm. It was done on February 25th. And apparently they figured out how to do it, and it's kind of easy to do. And so they hooked this thing up to the bug, and then they were able to control this roach. It's a really, really big roach. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen roaches before, but I don't know where they get these roaches, but they're
probably
big
New
ones.
York City.
Yeah. So anyhow, and they've got pictures of this thing, and they're actually thinking of commercializing this. It's sort of, I found it on a neat site. It's called Backyard Brains, Neuroscience for Everyone. And it's got all these neat little projects and things in here that all involve neuroscience, but this controlling this roach with this this hex bug thing really is bizarre, and they've got a video of it. And
can we say creepy instead of bizarre?
You can say weird, creepy, bizarre, gross, anything. But I think this is actually going to, you know, they're trying to commercialize this. It's a little weird because
as a toy? Commercialize it as a toy?
Well, it's a project.
So they sell the kit. You catch the roach and do the surgery yourself?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's pretty awesome.
It's I mean, whoa.
I go.
I mean, they are roaches, awesome. But I mean, yeah. It's
the story kind of bugs me.
Oh God!
And we're done for the day, folks. All right, let's do a little catch-up story on mites. We got a call, even though we're not taking calls, from John and Felton, that mites are not really arachnids. Did we say that they're arachnids? I think I said insect when we were talking about the mite story.
I thought they were...
They're not insects either, actually.
Oh, okay.
mites, along with ticks, I'm reading from Wikipedia, arthropods belonging to the subclass Acari, or also known as Acarian, and the class Arachnidia. So they're in the class Arachnidia, but not the subclass. Hmm. And so they're not insects, they are arachnids, I guess is the better way
to
say
that. Well, they're in the common family, I guess, of arachnids, but they're not... spiders.
The scientific,
not in the genus.
Right. The scientific maybe discipline devoted to the study of ticks and mites is called arachnology. That's cool.
Arachnology.
Arachology. Arachology.
That's the name of my new band.
It's awesome.
Arachnology.
Ticks, man. It's tick season again. Get your dogs treated.
Yeah. I imagine if we call them bugs, we're safe.
Let's go with bugs.
Bugs.
Now, Miles, he did cover a pseudo-robot story with cockroaches, and you didn't say your tagline, and I'd like you to. You mind?
I, for one, welcome our new remote control cockroach wielding overlords.
Thank you so much. Moving on, we have some thank yous.
Yes, I want to thank Bill from Carmel, Lee from Moss Landing, Billy from Santa Cruz, who is a new subscriber. Thank
Great.
You very much.
We love new subscribers.
Anonymous from Aptos, who is also a new subscriber.
I know Alan.
Another anonymous from Santa Cruz, Sheila and Doug from Santa Cruz, who are returning subscribers.
Thank you, Sheila.
Audrey from Santa Cruz, and Zoe from Aptos.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the donations. If you didn't hear your name and you're not the anonymous, it's time for you to call. The phone number is 888-777-1507. You listen to Geek Speak. You listen to KUSP regularly. You're a regular listener. And that inertia of listening has made you pseudo-passive. And I know your brain is working all the time with what we talk about, with the wonderful music. It enriches your life. It's a great experience for you. But you don't have to do anything when you do radio, right? You pop on radio, you listen to it, you're engaged, you're interested. Sometimes you stay in your car and you don't get out, even though you're supposed to get out because you're at your destination because of the interesting content you're hearing from us. But we're asking you to break that inertia pattern and actually do something. And it's important that you do.
And we totally get that you'll be busy in the car when you're driving. I've done this as well. We've all done this where you're going, oh, I really should give to insert public radio station. And at the same time, you also think like, oh, I'm busy. I got to go do this thing. I got to do this thing. It's Saturday. Just think about those times.
Yeah, I'll do it Monday,
think about those times where you're driving along and you're really not in a hurry. You're like, well, I got to get this thing done. Whatever. Just pull your car over. Just pull off from the next exit.
Interesting.
Just stop off for a second. Pick up your cell phone, give KUSP a call, and the numbers are 888-777-1507, or going to KUSP.org if you've got those smartphones. Just stop, take the 2 minutes to give that pledge, then get right back on the freeway and go on with your day. Doesn't take much time at all. Or if you're at home, just open up that laptop, click on the big blue button, and you're done.
You know, we just got an anonymous donor in SoCal pledged to match up to $500.
Great. So we are on the second.
Yes.
So we've just matched the first anonymous from Scotts Valley. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And this is another anonymous from where? What city?
From, it looks like SoCal. Anonymous SoCal, donor in SoCal. Yep.
So that means even though we ran out of the first matching, we have a second matching. And this is a $500 mm-hmm. as well?
$500. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar if you call right now.
You know, I feel like it's, you know, it's our duty, of course, to remind you of how important KUSP is, but the content, you know, that you listen to and the station to your life because you listen. And I feel like I could do that a lot. But instead of doing that right now, I'm going to assume that you know that and that you're going to take action. And we're going to get on with our news stories of the week. But that requires that you pick up the phone right now and call. And you can really do the show, listen to the show, and also talk to the people in the room because they'll take time with you if you'd like, and you can listen in on, you know, the next science story that we cover. The number is 888-777-1507. Please call now, and we'll continue with the show. 888-777-1507. I believe we were up for Miles, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I just do want to do that note of, if you're listening to this on podcast, we know who you are. Come on.
We have your IP addresses.
Podcast listeners, please make a donation at KUSP.org anytime, big blue button.
To be clear, we're not keeping track of your IP addresses for downloading the show. The geeks don't have content. That's NPR.
But speaking of IP addresses.
Yes.
Home routers. Everyone, just about everyone has them. You get a cable modem, you have DSL, you hook it up to that little home gateway kit. It shares your wireless in your house, things like that. And for the most part, we don't really endorse any particular product to say, like, you should get this one. And I'm still not going to do that. But at the same time, I have this notion where I say, don't buy a certain type.
Absolutely. If you know it's painful. If the car is going to explode because the spiders are getting into it, We're going to tell you not to buy that.
Right. Except the router isn't going to explode, but it is going to, it is causing some problems for us. It's kind of like a self-help for us computer professionals as well, and it helps you too.
What router is it? Who's the bad guy today?
The bad guy is Cisco.
That little company.
And their, yes, and their, and also their home product line, which is Linksys.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're needing to buy a new router, don't buy a Cisco or Linksys.
Wow, that's
very strident, isn't it?
That's a giant statement. I mean, because that's a very large market of home routers.
Yes,
and they're a big company that I feel theoretically has good engineers. So what'd they do wrong?
Good engineers that are not supporting IPv6 correctly.
Oh, problem.
So
this isn't like, oh well, we don't have enough money for, because it's a budget device, or whatever. Because Apple, they're supporting IPv6 just fine. D-Link, they're supporting IPv6 just fine. But consistently, the Cisco routers, the Linksys routers, are not. And I just want to call them out publicly.
Saying is this large market of home routers is not supporting the next technology level, which is restricting our ability to move forward with tech.
It's
right?
Probably,
that's your concern.
It's probably the largest.
I don't mean like, I would assume.
I would guess. Yeah. They're
definitely in corporate.
If they're not the largest, they pretty much will gobble up enough to be the largest.
Right. I'm not talking about, oh, this new tech. Oh, we've got to do the march of progress. I'm not talking about a new operating system upgrade. I'm talking about the global pool of IPv4 addresses is gone.
It's gone.
The local, the regional ones, like for the US, for Africa, will be gone sometime later this year. Which means that we're going to have to do really weird hacks. And quite possibly your internet performance will be degraded.
That's right.
The ability for the internet to work is going to become more and more degraded. You're going to have to put more and more band-aids
on. And we've covered this story before, and I'll just do it really briefly. Computers on the internet are connected together via numbers, and there's a certain amount of numbers in this current system we use called IPv4. We've ran out of new numbers. So we can't really grow the internet. And what that's going to do is it's going to trickle down to every service. You're going to have to do a more complicated front-end layer before you get connected, and that causes latency and issues with performance. And it's not going to affect everybody right away, but it's going to come into play. And we've already ran out of the large pool, which means like a new country can't get more IP addresses. They just don't exist. So there's a new technology called IPv6, which is
actually
it's not new. That's the thing, is it's not new. It's totally available. And because we don't have the infrastructure so far, everything's up to date, we can't really switch over to it. And this home problem is exactly
right. And also, when you have ISPs that want to move over to IPv6, if their customers don't have equipment
they
that can handle it,
they can't do it.
It becomes a maintenance nightmare.
Right.
And
how's a person to know, though? I mean, there's a lot of this router talk right now, but you know, the average person out there, they just go to Comcast and then they just plug their thing in.
Absolutely.
They don't know what's going on. I mean, how are you going to know?
That's why Miles is saying, don't buy Cisco.
Not get into any technical minutiae. Mm-hmm. Just don't buy the Cisco. Don't buy the Linksys.
Now, when they start supporting IP6,
and
well,
when
you'll
they
change
do,
that opinion,
I will
right?
absolutely okay. come back on here and say, woohoo, they've done it. Mm-hmm. Go back on there. Or if you're a tinkerer, and you are willing to go through and change, update the firmware.
Because the one thing I was thinking is the Linksys 54.
Yeah, the WRT 54G.
Those things are fantastic. You can put Linux on it, and then it supports IP6.
If you are willing to be a geek and flash the firmware and
don't
do some extra stuff.
Don't do it unless you understood that entire sentence.
Right. If you understood what I said and you're like, hey, that sounds like fun, buy a Linksys.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you are going, well, that sounds kind of, what? Don't buy a Linksys. It's a very clear distinction there.
Thank you so much. Al, let's not talk about insects anymore for just a little while.
All right.
Let's cover something else. I talked about our story about the museums and Google doing kind of maps inside the museums, if you will. You have another map Google story?
Sure. This is an interesting thing. You know how the Google planes fly around and they take photographs of all the ground? So that when you do a search, you can say, well, show me the satellite view. I guess they call it satellite, but I think it's really a plane. And then you're able to remove all the roads and stuff, and then you can see the ground
just
and
see
all
the
that
pictures.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And there's all these things about, you can see cars and all that sort of thing. Well, in one particular picture of specifically the Alameda, California, an airport in Alameda, California, there was a picture of a plane, you know, like a 747 sized big plane broken in half that had been destroyed, it burned and there was you know, explosion marks on the ground and everything. So it was just like really, it looked like a horrific plane crash. But what it turned out is that there was a show being filmed on the airport at that moment. It's called Trauma, I think, or something like that.
Okay.
And they had all this plane out, but the picture of this plane. So if you go to this spot, you'll see this like exploded plane on the runway of this airport.
But it was a movie thing.
It is on the airport. It's right. Not like in Hollywood studios. It's on the airport, and there's an exploded plane on the tarmac.
And so everybody's finding this image because, of course, it stays up for quite a while.
It's still there, as a matter of fact. And I'm putting a link to it. So if
up
you
on
go,
geekspeak.org,
yeah, and when you go there, you'll see geekspeak.org, and you'll see the listing of our stories, and you'll see the story. No one was hurt in this Google Maps plane crash, and it'll have a link directly to this part in the map. And not only that, the page that shows that and explains this also has a link to the section of the show that was filmed.
Oh, great.
On this.
Oh, very
and,
cool.
And it's actually pretty gripping. I watched it. It was about a plane crash.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
About a plane crash. And, you know, I was like, it was really quite, I was like, wow, this looks like it would have been a good show.
That's cool. That's cool.
So okay. It's worth checking that out.
Epicgeekspeak.org. And Al's next story is going to actually be a little bit more about Google and insights you can learn about what Google search phrases and stuff. Pretty interesting stuff.
And Miles, coming up, you'll also hear about how you can increase your self-esteem by using Facebook.
With everything going on in the world these days, you could argue that keeping connected to what's going on around the world has never been more important. That means your support of KOSP has never been more important. We count on listeners for over 50% of our budget. So everything we do here, 50% comes from you, the listener. Your contribution is combined with the contributions of others and used to pay for the public media service that none of us could have built on our own. That's really important. We can't do this without all of us doing it together. Help us work our radio magic with your support. KOSP keeps you connected, and what's more, it keeps you connected in a world that's even more important to be connected to.
And that matching gift from the anonymous donor in SoCal is still in effect. Remember, so every dollar you put in, $2 comes out. It's like a magic box. And just think about all the news and information you get in a typical week and how much of it comes from listening to KUSP. And think about how much the standards of journalism or, you know, that thing that we do.
I like how you classes away from journalism.
Right. And chances are you listen to this because you are entertained by us or you trust what you hear is accurate and fair and thoroughly reported. So give as generously as you can now at KUSP.org or by calling 1-888-777-1507. And podcast listeners, remember, KUSP.org.
So the most common amount that people give is $120 during a fundraising campaign. You can give your contribution any way you like, or you can give it in a lump sum. You can authorize $10 a month, monthly payments to us from your bank account or credit card. And if you do pay monthly, you'll quickly realize that compared to cable or an internet connection, $10 a month for KUSP is a great deal.
It is. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. The phone number, again, 888-777-1507. To be clear, this is a toll-free number, of course. You just dial 1-888-777-1507. And of course, online, it's nice and secure via secure socket layers, SSL. That's the https://, part of the browser. Anyway, that locks down and makes sure that the connection is between you and us. And you put in credit card information, takes just a few minutes, and please feel free to do it that way as well. Or, of course, you know, right now, if you're listening live, Rick's in the other room and a whole bunch of other volunteers, including the board president of KUSP is in the other room.
HTTPS?
Yeah.
Yeah, that means that no one can listen in. It's just a conversation between you and us. It's private. It's safe. It's secure.
What are you selling?
No one else needs to know. It's just between us. Just hit that big blue button.
So all we need to reach our goal for this episode of Geek Speak is another $590. So that means that just five of you come and call up and donate the $120, which is $10 a month, real easy. We take it out of your check account every month or bill your credit card every month at $10. Pretty cheap. If you think about how much coffee you drink or other kind of perks in your life that are small amounts every day, you'll realize that what we're asking is not very much at all. We're talking about 30 cents a day if you donate that level. please feel free to call right now and help us match our goal. 888-777-1507. Miles.
Some people had said that almost $600 in 10 minutes? That can't be possible. You can show us that it's possible. You, the listeners, can show us that anything is possible.
You have some thank yous, Miles?
Yes. Thank you so much to Brian from Staunton, Illinois.
Oh, great.
Wow.
Candace Tanner from Aptos. Mark from Capitola. Kristen from Santa Cruz. And unfortunately, I don't know how to read this name, but Davenport, thank you so much for
someone confusing message. In Davenport. Thank you.
Claudia in Capitola.
Hey, the Davenport person, call up next time and correct Miles on air. It'd be fun. Let's go ahead and do your next news story, Mr. Elam.
Yes, after all that social conversation, let's talk about how being social on Facebook can actually make you happier, can increase your self-esteem, can make you feel more fulfilled.
Because we did have a story a couple weeks ago about how
it isolates.
Facebook makes you feel bad.
Right.
So the make you feel bad study was more about like if other people are saying really impressive things. Like being your friend on Facebook, is really hard because you take these amazing photographs, and you're a designer, so everything you do is pretty. Yeah. So it's very competitive. I feel bad whenever I read Al's stories. Yeah.
But if all your friends are as mediocre as no, I'm just
as you and me.
According to this study from Cornell University researchers, and it's published in Cyber Psychology, Behavior, and Social Networking, they took a group of students and sat them down, having some control groups that were looking at computers that were showing just reflections of themselves, like pictures showing themselves,
okay,
doing random things. And then the third group allowed to surf their own Facebook profiles and its associated tabs for a while. And at the end, all three groups were given a questionnaire. And the ones that interacted with Facebook that went through and saw people's statuses and were able to tweak their own settings and their profile, they scored better on that questionnaire after the fact. They felt better. They felt more.
I love good studies like this. Let's see. Millions and millions of people are using Facebook. They spend a lot of time on it. I wonder if they're enjoying themselves. Well, of course they are.
Yeah.
What a strange concept to ask. But cool. Very cool that we see that you can enjoy yourself on Facebook.
Well, it's just yet another one. And actually, it was a small sample size. So we'll see how that goes.
It's interesting. These stories that Al covered a couple weeks ago, it was a very similar topic, but inverse to some degree. Your story is that it makes you feel better. Your story, Al, as I recall, was it makes you feel less important or something of that nature, but not necessarily that you didn't enjoy it.
Right.
Right? So you might still enjoying feeling less important. So those two stories are not contradictory. Now I can't even say the word.
So Facebook is the total perspective vortex.
It is.
Just lets you know your place in the world. But, hey.
But also you enjoy it. Okay. Let's, Al, what's going on with, I didn't forward promote your next story, did I? I'm so sorry.
Yes, Google, you did.
Google, yes.
Oh, yeah. More about there's another thing about Google. By the way, Facebook, we've been doing Facebook for 15 years.
Really?
You and I and Miles. And we've been posting pictures of stuff
That's
we've
true.
Done. And we've been doing this. This is, so there, anyhow.
You haven't seen the Social Network movie yet, have you?
No, I
me
haven't.
Me neither.
Why would I see that?
Just ticks me off too much.
So, anyhow.
Well, I actually have a whole bunch of
I know it's supposed to be good,
really
okay?
surprised with me saying, you haven't seen that movie?
Everybody says that to me, too. They're like, what, you haven't seen
something
that?
Something about
I, and
it.
And I had just, my grandma saw it and then called, and my aunt called me afterwards, you got to see this movie. I just don't, I'm not engaged enough to see it.
Yeah. Well,
and it's something about the bitterness I feel for not creating Facebook myself.
Well, no, it's really because you did create Facebook.
And I just didn't implement
all of us did. We did that already, and it's like, well, this guy did it and made billions. That's funny. Why didn't... anyhow, well, let's just get on behind our own personal... we don't want to... There's a story here about Google that I can bring up that's... Okay. It's called Insights for Search, and it's found by going to google.com/insights. And what it does is it allows you to enter search terms and then find out specific data about the search terms, because Google has such a massive amount of data. Like, for example, you can type in a word and then you can see when that word is usually searched and from what countries it's searched. So I did a sample of it, and I typed in Apple, thinking, well, people probably type in Apple. And then I go and I look at it gives you a really nice charts and everything, and I see really regular amounts of when people really peak to search. It goes back to 2004, and there's just a really predictable amount of times people search for Apple. I thought, well, that's probably when they're coming out with their new products. Uh-huh. And then I look and I see that it's like in October kind of. And then if you go deeper, you see it's their like Apple recipes for, you know,
for
cooking things to cook, you know. So you're able to say, well, a lot of people search the term Apple at this time of year. You know, so you're able to use this information for your you know, I mean, this is a simple example, but
it's an amazing, it's an amazing tool if you're interested in market trends.
It's a great tool because a lot of terms aren't so obvious. I mean, it's Thanksgiving, okay, people tend to type that in around Thanksgiving.
Imagine that.
You know, yeah. And so you understand that. But there's a lot of
more. But if you also do something like you just look for recipes and then you hone down to, you know, to Thanksgiving time periods,
right.
You know from that, you assume from that what people are cooking for Thanksgiving.
So maybe you
it's
might be...
And it's regional-based.
Yeah,
and
you can see what countries, cool. And it's kind of cool.
That's Google Insights, and you can learn how to get there from geekspeak.org. We have less than $500 left. We have less than 5 minutes left. Please call now to donate. The phone number is 1-888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507. Go ahead and get the inertia working in the other direction and pick up the phone and call us.
$500 in 3 minutes? I don't know if that's possible.
Oh, nice. Can we thank some people?
Thank you so much to Mary from Aromas, Peter from Morgan Hill, an anonymous donor from Palo Alto, and Clyde from Corralitos. Thank you so much for helping KUSP reach its goal.
We still have a crazy USB of the week in just a second. But before we do that, I want to hear a couple calls. The phone number is 888-777-1507. I want to let you know that GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence. And David Lawrence is the puppet master on Heroes, if you watch that show. That's the actor.
If you used to watch that show.
If you used to watch that show. You still might on Netflix or something. In any case, David has you know, heard that we're a nonprofit radio station. He's a radio guy as well. He said, well, you know, just use the name. It'd be fine. Just mention that I own the trademark to protect myself. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. You can still call in right now to help us match our grant for the pledge for today's show of GeekSpeak. The phone number is 888-777-1507. Please pick up the phone now and give us a donation. 888-777-1507, because GeekSpeak and KUSP are important to you. How important? Well, you wouldn't know about this if it weren't for GeekSpeak and KUSP.
Yeah, you know, this is the crazy USB of the week. And I've done so many of these, and a lot of them that I've run into have to do with warming your hands or warming heated USB
slippers.
I feel like maybe we should change it from crazy USB devices to crazy USB devices that are gloves or slippers that warm you, because you could have I could just do those. Now this one is really a silly one. It's called the Fuzzy Warm, and they look like little teddy bears that you put on your hands. And you can stick your fingers through the bottom part of the head. It's like little teddy bear heads. And then you plug it into the your computer, and it's supposed to keep your hands warm while you're typing. This thing is really, really silly looking.
If you're wearing bears in your hands, how are you typing?
You know what? Your fingers poke out, and it's a silly thing, and the bears are like staring at you while you're typing. And your hands are warm. I feel like,
But is it fuzzy?
It is fuzzy, and as far as I can tell, it's warm.
Yeah, and it's warm because, of course, your body temperature, but also because you got to plug it in your computer.
And this is real, and I'm going to put a link on geekspeak.org, and I'm kind of wondering if in the future, as I look progress into the future a little bit, if I'm going to be doing crazy Thunderbolt devices.
Totally.
The new stat. Think about.
Thank you so much for listening to GeekSpeak. Stay tuned for this. We got Car Talk coming up, and, of course, you can call in right now. You know the numbers.